Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kata Mode. I am here with Codameron.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about creature abilities and single turn decisions within AOA. So for our AOA review, we're trying to look at things that are different between the two sets. And so in set one, when it came to deciding what you're going to do on your turn, everything can pretty much be traced back to the Delta. It's all about like, oh, that guy's a double Reaper. Let me kill him. If I fight, let me make sure my guy lives, their guy dies. And every single decision for the most part comes down to how do I make sure that my amber per turn is greater than your amber per turn, i.e. the Delta. You could always trace it back to that. But there are a couple exceptions in set one, so we figure we'll mention them and then we'll transition to how set two is a little different.
Yeah, have you ever been in this situation where you're playing along and then they drop an Ember Imp and you go, wow, I hate that thing. I really have to take that off the board. And, you know, Succubus, you can deal with that, but Ember Imp just feels bad. It's this different thing that isn't the Delta. It isn't really affecting the Delta, but you have to take it off the board right away. AOA does that like it's its job. There are so many different types, and we've actually got a couple categories of effects and examples of what these kind of are that we would want to look for in AOA.
Yeah, now, specifically with Ember Imp, usually when you're up against a set one deck, it'll be like one Ember Imp. Where things get hard in set one is if they have an Ember Imp and a Succubus and a Restoring Guntus. Now you have like real decisions on like, okay, which one of these guys do I actually really need to kill right now? But that doesn't really happen all that often, so like you don't have to think in these ways as much in set one.
And when that even happens, you stop killing the John Smith a lot of the time. You stop killing the Snudge. The Snudge, maybe you kill that. You don't kill you don't kill the Charette because you can get your Amber later once the Restrained Guntus is off the table, right?
Yeah.
But those are powerful effects. Set 2 has a lot of good effects, a lot of not game warping effects, but game altering effects, things that can really hurt your deck's forward progress, and you have to make choices like, yes, that Dusk Witch is on the table, but I really can't just let you have this Collector Worm or this giant Logo Spore with the Sutterkin. What do I kill? I don't know.
Yeah, it's about understanding when you need to not prioritize Amber, right? Because like set one is really easy to always prioritize Amber and you get to the right decisions. In set two, there are cards that hurt you and there are cards that help your opponent and they're worded weird and the board texture matters. And so like you have to really take considerations. And so we've grouped up different types of card effects on creatures to try to go over like how you would approach these different types of things.
Right. So I'm going to start introducing these categories, and keep in mind that when we're talking about this, we're going to be looking at what am I afraid of? Which of these categories hurts me the most? The first one we're going to talk about is action hate. This is very clearly Barrister Joya, all the reap to stun creatures. Sometimes even things that hurt you from fighting. Sometimes taunt. Sometimes maybe there's even an upgrade or something. And these really affect you sometimes. If your deck is all about reaping, sometimes you need to reap. And you have to kill the Joyster.
I mean, there's just a lot of them, right? You have really good taunt. Like, in particular, you have deploy taunt. So in set one, all the taunts can only end up on the edges. So if there's like a dangerous guy in the middle, you always know you can get back to killing it. That is different in this set because I can just deploy a taunt in the middle and you're like, oh crap, that guy that I was planning on killing a turn or two from now I can't kill. And it becomes more of a problem. Or here's this Banister Joya. I can't reap anymore. I need to go kill her now. And or it's like, oh, I want to reap with this other guy, but now I get stunned. And so like whenever you're affecting people's ability to take actions, maybe it doesn't matter for your deck. Maybe it does. And like if it might matter more than actually gaining amber. And you might have to adjust your play in a way that you wouldn't have had to adjust in set one.
And this looks a little bit different than just the straight up runaway board states episode that we talked about. This is not looking at the amber, but still providing your opponent questions. Which thing is the most important thing for you to kill? And sometimes you need to make your actions and you need to make your reaps. And sometimes they're protecting like big removal tools. So another category we have is these removal creatures. Right? Ones that I want to highlight are Collector Worm. This is a guy that kills elusive guys, little guys. There's, and then it even doesn't stockpile your opponent's discard pile. It hurts your exhume. There are some decks that just have to scoop to collect a worm because they can't ping it hard enough. They can't... Sometimes you have to take the chance where you have two Brobnar guys that are fives and double fight into the collector worm.
Yeah, now, so as far as a collector worm, luckily he is relatively easy to kill if you have dudes that are bigger than three, right? Because he only deals two damage back and he doesn't capture you. But what you have to understand is, like, some decks he matters, some decks he doesn't. So, like, if your deck's relying on elusive to keep you alive, he matters. If your deck is relying on recursion, he matters because he's not going to let the cards go in the discard pile. But if your deck doesn't really care about recursion and doesn't rely on elusive, he's not as big of a deal, especially if you can just run, like, fours into him.
Yeah, if you've got, like, I know that Grogan's is an eight, and there are some cards, if you have guys that are bigger than seven, then Collector Worm's not a problem. He can't actually fight into you because he's not he doesn't have enough armor. But Lollip, on the other hand, Lollip is basically a removal tool. He just walks into your house and takes your biggest guy, right? So is it worth it? Like, I think Baron McGevin, he's the Sanctum guy who's a 6-1. He can't stand up to Lollip. He's going to get smacked, and you're going to lose all that amber you captured. So if I have that Baron, maybe I actually have to play Baron, fight with Baron, Grey Rider Baron to take out the Lollip before Lollip gets the better of me.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where, like, Lollip in particular, where he's different is if you have a deck that just has really big dudes and you expect them to live, Lollip's a problem. Like Collector Worm is a really good counter to Lollip because, like, if you're playing Collector Worm, the intention is if your guys are all fives or lower, you're not touching them. But Lollip just kills them in one shot, you know, and he kills a lot of these big Sanctum shielded guys. So maybe now it's like, okay, you know what? There are these double Reap guys over here that I ordinarily would want to kill. Or maybe I'd want to just kill two guys, but instead I'm going to ram two guys right into Lollip because I need to make sure this dude is off the table so he doesn't hurt my game plan if he affects me more than that card would affect other types of decks.
Right. And then the third type of removal that we're noticing in this set are the side hitters. This is Bingle Bang Bang. This is Cowfine. This is Mindworm. These are cards that weirdly hit into the taunt guy and then hit the guys next to it. Are you reliant on taunt? Did you just play your own taunt guy deployed in the middle? You can't let that Bingle Bang Bang live because your taunt guy actually kind of hurt your progress.
Yeah.
So, again, action hate. Do you need to do your actions? Removal tools. Are you trying to build a board of a certain size, of a certain texture, and do you need to keep it alive? Right? And then kind of tying into both of those is the creature augmentation. These are the foxes, both Panpakas, to give the guys skirmish and power. This is the Grove Keeper. The Lamindra, to give your guys elusive, or the Little Nif, to give your guys fight to steal.
Yep.
Is your deck behind on board? Are you going to stay behind on board? Are you liable of being behind on board? If I have a Collector Worm of my own, maybe I'm not afraid of the Lamindra coming down. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so you think about someone like, say, Little Nif. This is a very straightforward decision, right? This is very much like set one. That card just gains too much amber. You kill it on sight, right? But then something like a Grove Keeper or a Lion Beartrum is a little bit trickier because, like, Grove Keeper, yeah, he makes guys bigger. But who is he making bigger? If he's making just, like, Grogan's an 8 to a 9, who cares? That doesn't mean anything. But if he's taking, like, other cards... Yeah, like if he's taking your Duskwitch and making it outside of your kill spell range, that's a problem. You might have to answer him a little quicker. Or, speaking of Duskwitch, let's say I play a Lion Beartrum on the side. You now have to think, this guy at any point can just play a Duskwitch next to the Lion Beartrum, and now that Duskwitch is a 3 and much harder to kill, and this game can get out of hand. So, much like we talked about with the Runaway Board States episode, you might have to actually kill that Lion Beartrum ahead of time to make sure that when that Duskwitch comes down, your Sucker Punch can actually kill it, you know, and there's like preventing these types of actions, right? You have to really think about how your board gets affected.
And this is kind of going back to not only which creature is stopping you the most, but which creature is enabling your opponent's non-amber related plays more. Which creatures are going to buff up your opponent's board to a point where they get to that runaway board state? Is there a way that we can stop them preemptively, or is there a reason that we need to stop it now? Or are you holding an unlocked gateway and you don't have to deal with these things, right? Do you have an answer? What does your answer look like? And when do you have to address particular threats on their board.
Yeah, and so I think a big thing that you have to think about when you're making these decisions is, like, it's not just amber anymore, right? It's not just, like, how much amber can I gain? You have to think about, like, okay, what cards do my opponent have here that really suck to play against and that I might want to get rid of, versus also, like, what cards could they have that help them in a way that I might want to stop them in a way that's more subtle? And understanding those subtleties is different, because you can't just put a raw amber value on it like you could in set one. Here you have to think a little bit more. It's like you're always playing against a bunch of ember imps and succubuses. It's just like a different calculation,
right? And all these three categories, archon hate, action hate, removal tools, and combo enablers, I'm sorry, and creature augmentation, they're all kind of in the same house, right? They're all kind mm-hmm. of middle of the pack. They're mid-game. They're trying to get your board to build up. But then there's two other categories that we have that I just kind of jumped the gun on a little bit.
Yep.
these combo enablers. And I think Duskwitch is kind of the queen of that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that Duskwitch, you look at her and she goes, I am going to make my next turn gigantic. It's going to mm-hmm. hurt. And everyone thinks that Duskwitch is kill on sight. I do. But yeah. There are sometimes like, hey, wait a second. They've already got a big board. Maybe I'm supposed to kill the little Nif first, because he's actually – maybe I should be caring about the Delta right now. They're not going to be playing a bunch of creatures. There are some times where you don't kill the Duskwitch on sight.
Yeah. You also have things like Titan Librarian. So Titan Librarian is a very subtle benefit because like you're not doing anything immediately to actually augment your board nor hurt your opponent. But – if you let a Titan Librarian just live for a bunch of turns, like that's a lot of archive cards that the bill is going to come due at some point. And so you do need to make sure that card gets taken care of as far as a combo enabler goes. And like we kind of mentioned, one like Lion Bertram can be a combo enabler as far as a Duskwitch is concerned. And then also there's a lot of people that like they see Drumroknot and they're like, I got to kill that guy because I know there's a world where this really hurts me and that they just have a runaway board that blows me out.
Yeah, like Drumroknot is wildly efficient, not just with Ganger Chieftain, but like I've been wrecked by Drumroknot into Brammo, right?
Yeah, that's still one of my favorites.
That's like 8 damage onto my board. And yeah. Sometimes like I think I'm not too worried about Drumroknot, but I just don't think I've lost too hard to it yet. There's going to be a day where I lose to Drumroknot really hard and I say, okay, from now on I'm killing Drumroknot. Just like I feel about Duskwitch.
Well, there's also situations. So if you've seen the video of Kodamron playing in his vault tour that happened recently, there was a situation where the Skirmish Wolf was on the side and then his board was looking really good. And then his opponent says, I'm going to play, because Kodamron had a Soul Snatcher. So he's like, okay, even if you hit like use all your Brobner guys to fight, it's fine. I just gained a bunch of Amber for Soul Snatcher. And he's like, okay, I'm going to play Into the Fray on Groke. And Groke now has Skirmish. And so now I board wipe you and make you lose every Amber you gained off of the Soul Snatcher.
Yeah, it worked out. I still won that game. But that was a real moment where I go, oh, I ignored this Jaga and it really hurt me. And what I did is instead of killing it, I moved it to the other side with the Beam Bolter. So I turned it into not a combo enabler. But I really got comboed hard in that moment, and I was set back from a reasonable position to a really behind position. I had to come out with a monster play to come out of that hole.
Yeah, exactly. And so the last category that we have in there is just...
It's control.
Oh, sorry, control. No. Control. Generalized control.
So control, I mean... Yes, Restringentis is a control card, and it's I think very still a control card in this set. And there are a lot of other ways, like hey, Grovekeeper or Lemindra plus Restringentis sounds gross, right? Yeah, but also you have other things like Pose Pixies. I think Pose Pixies deserves a real moment in the spotlight to say this is a new kind of control effect that, for those of you who don't realize, I didn't realize this for a while. If you capture Amber from the general pool against Pose Pixies, that just gives it to your opponent when they kill the guy.
They're basically just playing blood money on themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Pose Pixies kind of is in the same general camp as Restringentis, where it just says there's a certain number of cards in your deck that you're not allowed to play. Now, Restringentis is a little bit of a harder control because, like, you can't even discard them. But with Pose Pixies, it's like, you know, if I have a Charette, I don't want to play a Blood Money for 3 Amber on myself, so I'd rather just discard the Charette. I don't want to play any steel effects, because then it just, like, then it just gain Amber. Like, I'm not actually taking anything from you.
Yeah, and obviously Tezmaw still fits into this list. And to an extent, you know, going back to the top with Amber Action Hate, you know, Joya fits into this list. The key imps fit into this list of just the other effects that kind of affect the game. And sometimes you have to look at that and say, you know what, that Pose Pixie needs to die. My deck relies on capture, and I can't be giving that to my opponent. I can't let my Swindle be even a more dead card in my hand. Pose Pixie needs to go away.
Or like one of my favorite cards, Big Tree, Tendalin. If you have a card that wants archives, he's a big deal. He's 9 strength, and he just burns archive cards. So like that's a guy that you're like, okay, if he's on the board, do I have to get rid of him more faster than it looks, you know? Or can I survive anyways? And you might have to way overcommit to get his ass off the table because of how his ability affects your deck. In a way that it, and a lot of decks that don't care about archives, he doesn't matter, right? He's big, but he doesn't kill anything, right? He only does 2 damage when attacking. So there's certain decks where that guy is like the nut, and there's other decks where he's just a wall. And understanding where your deck lands, and that's a really big deal.
Right. And as we play more AoA games, and as this game Keyforge gets more and more complicated, we're going to see more of these effects and have more of these choices to make. And recognizing when killing the Duskwitch, or the card that is the must-kill, quote-unquote, card, isn't the right choice, is what's going to separate the pro players from the average players, right? Understanding that actually killing Tentadin stops my big play, and I need to make that happen. That's understanding not only what helps you most, but what is enabling my opponent the most outside of just getting a bigger delta, getting more reaps and amber and such.
Yeah, so to wrap this up, the purpose of this episode is to talk about how the creatures in this set are interactive in a way that is not just pure amber, right? You have to make other considerations when you're deciding which ones to go for. And you want to say something?
Oh, sure. Action Hate, removal tools, creature augmentation, combo enablers, and control. Those are the 5 categories that we've kind of set out here. And they're vague, but you know, they're important to generalize.
You can make your own categories. The main thing we had these categories to help us go through this episode, but we also have them as a way to explain that, like, they do different things, right? It's not like they're just, oh, they're either amber or they're bad stuff. It's like, no, they're amber or they're maybe directly bad stuff to you. Bad stuff in the form of them getting good stuff, or maybe it affects how you're able to play with your actual board. And like taking all of that into consideration, I think makes a more interesting game. And it's one of the reasons I'm very excited about this set, because it really promotes interaction in a way the set one just kind of didn't. And still relevant for competitive play too.
It's really nice to see these interactions come out frequently and sealed, but also you gotta still think about the delta. I know that we've been talking about like, oh, Coda's all about the delta, but you know, you still want to build a board, you still want to do cards plus board, you still want to reap with your board to make sure you have amber. Now there are just more cogs in the system.
Yeah, it's another layer of decision making is all it is. So yeah, that's all there is for this episode. You can find us online. We are on Facebook and on Twitter. We are at DeathQuark for either one of them. And if you want to get to know more about us as like talking to us, you can join our Discord server. We're in there all the time. And also the rest of the BDQ community is also in there. You can find an invite to that in either one of our social medias. If you want more content, you can look at Codameron's YouTube channel. He streams Keyforge content all the time. And lastly, if you want to go even further than that, you can get some Bouncing Death Quark merch. You can find the link for that inside of our Discord. And with there, you can get shirts, you can get bags, you can get mugs, you can get all sorts of cool things that just have our logo and represent the team. So yeah, thank you for watching. Tell your friends about it, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.